We get things underway in the second hour this afternoon by welcoming to the program the author of a number of books, including Gun Crazy and Tab Hunter Confidential. He's the president of the Film Noir Foundation. You know him as the host of Noir Alley on TCM, and he might be the only guy that can give Bogart a run for his money when it comes to looking good in a bow tie. Eddie Muller with us. Hello, Eddie.
That's nice of you to say.
Well, enjoy your work so much on TCM. How did you become a noirarchaeologist?
I'll tell you, this is a funny story. Once upon a time, I got my entree to the publishing business by writing a book about the history of adults-only movies. And when I was done with that, I said, now I want to write a book about movies I actually like watching. So I wrote a book about film noir, and that was back at the early part of the century. And it's just taken off from there.
And you've talked about this on TCM. Your father was a boxing writer, and that's one of the things that drew you into this world.
That is correct, Rich, yeah. I sometimes say that watching the old film noir movies is, I feel like I'm watching my dad's home movies or something when I watch The Setup or Body and Soul, because that really was his world. I kind of missed it. I was born somewhat late in his life. And so there's no question that that's why I'm attracted to the films, I think. It's a way of exploring my dad's world safely.
And you base the character of Billy Nichols in your book, The Distance, on your father.
Absolutely. It's fictionalized, mind you. But the character, absolutely, very much modeled on my father.
So what was the first film noir that you saw when you could appreciate what the genre was?
Well, I suppose it's possible to appreciate the genre even if you don't know all the terms and the nomenclature. Things just resonate with people, right? I mean, some people respond immediately to comedies or musicals or something. But for me, it was the noir. And I guess it was a movie called Thieves' Highway. Mm-hmm. It was made in 1949, but set in San Francisco. And so that it fascinated me because I didn't recognize that place in the movie because all of it was gone by the time I saw the movie in the late 60s, early 70s. And that's another part of the fascination for me is how movies capture the past and then it disappears, but it's still there in the films. And that's very important to me.
I want to talk about a few films and some of my favorites. And one that every time it's on TCM, I have to be there watching. Gun Crazy is about as good as it gets when it comes to film noir.
Well, I appreciated that film enough that I wrote, as you mentioned at the top, I wrote an entire book about the creation of that film and its influence on other movies at the time. What do you get out of it, Rich? Why do you find it so special?
Well, I love the characters and the way they're portrayed. I love the I'm a school teacher in my full time job, so I can appreciate the struggles that young Bart goes through early on along the way, and to see his character arc. But it's just the cinematography is incredible. The pace of the film is so great. Yeah. It's just in addition to the story, it's just a beautiful movie.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I had the great good fortune of becoming friends with Peggy Cummins, who plays Annie Laurie Starr, the gunslinging gal in that movie. And she was just a total delight. That was one of the joys of my life, is that we became very good friends.
And of course, I love the fact that he wasn't even Russ yet. He was still Rusty Tamblyn is in it.
Right. He plays young Bart when he breaks the window of the hardware store to steal that Colt revolver, yeah. It's a pretty great movie, I have to agree with you.
One of the films that really got me hooked on film noir, and I also love him as an actor in everything he does, is Richard Widmark in Pick Up on South Street.
Oh, yeah. I had the great good fortune, again, to participate in a biography of Widmark that was done, oh my gosh, maybe 15 years ago on the Arts and Entertainment Network. And I specifically spoke about his work in film noir. And Widmark, of course, was still alive then. And I got a very nice little note that he sent to the producer saying, who is this guy that knows all about those films? And obviously, particularly Pick Up on South Street, but also Night in the City and Roadhouse and Kiss of Death. He was a giant in this genre.
Are there certain elements that go into making the perfect film noir?
Well, that's a good question. And, you know, one of the things that keeps this genre, if it even is a genre, one of the things that keeps it alive is that everybody likes to debate about what makes noir noir. And I don't really think there's any other type of film where people have this argument. I mean, a musical is a musical. A western's a western. A comedy's a comedy. But when people watch noir, they tend to argue over it. I hope in a fun and respectful way. But, I mean, I get this all the time. I think probably more than anything else, I am asked by people. They throw a title at me and say, is that noir or isn't it noir? And the fact that you can discuss this and have different criteria is pretty interesting. You know, there are those people who think if there's no femme fatale in the film, oh, then it's not noir. You know, if it's not in the, you know, if it's in color, it can't possibly be a film noir. I don't subscribe to all of these things, but I get where people are coming from when they argue the criterion.
We're talking with Eddie Muller here on Downtown. Well, one film that few could argue about whether or not it's a film noir is Out of the Past, which is just, it stuns me every time I see it. And one of the things that I'm constantly impressed with is to realize how young Jane Greer was when she made that film.
22 years old.
Wow.
They were all young. Robert Mitchum was the old man at 29 in the cast. And Kirk Douglas was 26 and Jane Greer was 22. People were different then. You know, I'm always startled by that. There was something about the fact that people lived lives before they got to Hollywood. And they looked a little more worldly and a bit more experienced, shall we say, than some actors you see today. But Out of the Past is definitive film noir. When people ask me, you know, I don't really understand what it is. Would you recommend a film that will kind of crystallize it for me? It's either Double Indemnity or Out of the Past are the two that I always mention.
Well, and Double Indemnity certainly up there. If not my number one, then perhaps 1A. Again, such a brilliant cast. And of everybody in that film who is so good, to me the performance that sticks with me is Edward G. Robinson.
I knew you were going to say that because it's like the perfect supporting role. One of the best supporting roles ever in movies, I think, you know, is Barton Keyes, the insurance man. And the stories about his how great he was on that film are kind of legendary. You know that scene where he runs through the empirical tables explaining to his protege Walter about all the different ways people die? And that was one take. He did that in one take.
Wow.
And just nailed it. And, you know, Billy Wilder was so thrilled. It's like, this man is a genius.
And it was such a discovery for me when I first saw this film, I think probably in my 20s, because I grew up watching Fred McMurray on My Three Sons and had no idea when I was 9 and 10 years old about what he had done before he became Steve Douglas.
Right, exactly. And the fact that he had actually made pictures with Barbara Stanwyck prior to Double Indemnity. So it was interesting that they were teamed in that movie. And Stanwyck did not really want to do the film initially. And, you know, she was extremely popular at the time. She was the highest paid woman in America at the time she made that movie. And she really thought that playing a murderess was going to backfire on her and her career, and Wilder just challenged her and said, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were an actress.
You have talked about your love of Humphrey Bogart. Is he the quintessential film noir actor?
I don't see how anybody can deny that. I mean, other people obviously can have their personal favorites, but I really do believe that as a performer, Bogart was essential to the creation of this whole, I'm going to call it the noir ethos, but it was what he projected as an anti-hero. You know, starting, he really kind of started doing this with High Sierra. He had made a lot of pictures in the 1930s at Warner Brothers where he was the second banana. He was like in the shadow of Cagney and Robinson and even George Raft. But when he made High Sierra, he became sort of a outlawish leading man and an anti-hero. And then that was solidified with the Maltese Falcon. And then legend, he became a legend with Casablanca. But he had this incredible ability to project sort of a romantic idealism and a really hard cynicism at the same time. And I think that was the essence of his screen persona and why he was the perfect actor for film noir.
And often that cynicism is displayed to us through humor. And to me, that's always one of the great components of a very good film noir is the humor that is often subtle but always present.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Rich, because that's very true. I think people, you know, the initial wave of recognition that these films got decades and decades ago focused on how they represented, like, the dark side of Hollywood and the dark side of American culture. But over time, as we've gotten more and more corrupt in the culture, I think that people now watch these films and it's almost like they're comfort food in a way. And the language and the style, the verbal style, is something that people just relish. And you're absolutely right. There's a wit and a elan to the language in these films that just makes them so incredibly enjoyable.
So if Bogart is the quintessential leading man, who is his female counterpart?
Well, that you're going to get lots of arguments over this. because the women who, the big names, dabbled in noir, like Rita Hayworth did Gilda and Lady from Shanghai, and Ava Gardner did The Killers. But I have to say it's Barbara Stanwyck. Not just because of Double Indemnity, but she did a slew of these movies in the 1940s. No Man of Her Own, and Sorry Wrong Number, and The Strange Love of Martha Ivers. As a leading lady, I think it's hard to go against Barbara Stanwyck, who I happen to think is the greatest actress in the history of motion pictures.
Well, coming up this Saturday night, you've got another one of my favorites on. And what an abundance of riches when you look at the cast and crew of The Third Man, from Orson Welles to maybe my favorite character actor of the time period, Joseph Cotten, to the direction of Carol Reed, the screenplay from Graham Greene. So much talent here.
And the fabulous cinematography of Robert Krasker. You can't.
Yes.
I mean, Carol Reed gets all the credit because he's the director, but the lone Oscar that was won by that film was for its cinematography by the great Robert Krasker. But you're right. I think it could be argued that The Third Man comes as close to being a perfect film as any film you could cite, I think.
Yeah, and then add into it the wonderful music that was so unusual and unique that, well, went on to become a huge hit on the charts from Anton Karas.
Yes, something that I talk about at some length in my outro this coming weekend. I've learned some very interesting things about Anton Karas and his life after The Third Man that I'm going to be sharing with people this weekend. You know, the other thing that I get such a kick out of doing this show is, you know, I've been doing this for quite a while now. It's been over 20 years where I've been kind of like this noir expert and doing film festivals and writing books and everything. But I get such a thrill now because there's a social media aspect to this where you can see people commenting in real time about the films and things. And it pleases me so much to hear people say, "This is the first time I'm ever seeing this movie." And I just love that. The fact that, you know, we're sort of passing the baton to a younger generation. And, you know, you hear a lot in the media about, oh, these kids say they don't appreciate old movies and stuff. And I got to say, that is simply not true. because I do festivals live, and the auditoriums are filled with young people who really respond to this. And doing the show on TCM, I get the exact same feedback. It's across the board, you know. Younger people will write to me and say, this is a great way for me to connect with my father, mother, grandmother, whatever, because those people saw these movies when they first came out, and then they have the fun of sharing their memory of the films with their children or grandchildren, whatever, when they see the movies on TCM. And I really love that.
Well, and it's also a great lesson in the art of filmmaking, too. And you mentioned Robert Krasker, and his techniques are so unique in The Third Man. Can you explain what's called the Dutch angle technique?
Well, a Dutch angle or a canted angle is just where you visually you're displaying some unease in the environment by putting the camera at a tilted angle that's very unnatural. So you're not seeing things straight on at eye level. It's askew. You know, very much the antithesis of a filmmaker like Howard Hawks, who always put the camera exactly at like the average person's height at eye level and shot everything straight and static. He didn't want people to notice the camera. Carol Reed's technique in The Third Man is exactly the opposite, very much like Orson Welles' technique was when he was directing. A lot of, you know, obviously, I think Welles inspired a lot of what Carol Reed does in The Third Man. But, you know, there's no right way to make a movie, right?
I also love what you and your TCM colleagues have been doing with Reframed. That is such a wonderful, different way of looking at classic films.
Well, I think it's an essential thing that had to happen, because I'm mentioning that we want younger people to continue to find these films relevant, and as the culture changes, I don't want the movies to get lost because people say, well, that's no longer relevant, or we're embarrassed by something in this movie, so it's not worth watching anymore. I very much am opposed to that. And I want the movies to stay vital and for people to be able to see them. But I totally understand, like, why some people would be rubbed the wrong way by what are considered problematic elements in these films. So I think what we're doing on TCM is the right way to approach it. Plus, it's great fun to have these conversations with my colleagues. And it's, you know, it's no different than what we'd be doing if we were sitting around watching movies. We're just sharing that with people.
Also, very exciting news about your book, Dark City, which is coming out in a new revised and expanded edition.
I am sitting here talking to you right now, Rich, at my computer looking at the final proofs of the book on a big monitor, and I am thrilled to pieces about it. It really looks beautiful.
Well, we can't wait for that.
That was the book that started it all for me. When that book came out, I was invited by the American Cinematheque in Hollywood to program a film festival based on that book. And that festival led to my doing this all over the United States and then being invited to do it overseas. And then eventually, you know, TCM said, why don't you just do it on the network?
I love it. Well, you can visit Eddie's website at eddiemuller.com and, of course, catch his work on TCM Noir Alley Saturday night and then again on Sunday morning. To me, and as a film fan and a sports fan, when you're there, it's like when Bob Costas would be there for a big game. I know it's going to be a great movie because Eddie Muller is there to tell us all about it, to really enjoy your work. And thanks so much for being with us today, Eddie.
Oh, that's very kind of you, Rich. I appreciate it very much. It was really nice talking to you.
That is Eddie Muller of TCM here on Downtown.